The next presentation is by Daryl Chastain. He is from University of Georgia, Crop and Soil Sciences. He will be talking about the physiological responses of Gossypium hirsutum to contrasting irrigation regimes.
Good morning. Again, I'm Daryl Chastain, and I'll be discussing physiological responses of cotton to contrasting irrigation regimes. In arid regions, irrigation is a no-brainer. You have high evaporative demand, low rainfall. If you turn your irrigation off, you're not going to have any yield. For humid regions like the southeastern United States where I work, you have a lower evaporative demand, high humidity, increased rainfall. But this rainfall doesn't necessarily happen whenever you need it to happen. If you hit a sensitive period in your crop growth, you can actually negatively impact your yield. There's also year-to-year variability. Being able to turn your irrigation pumps on can eliminate some of that year-to-year variability and ultimately prevent your profit loss. So whenever we irrigate, we have to be concerned about who we're competing with this water for. If we're constantly competing with municipalities, they're going to win. They're going to get that water. There's also environmental concerns. As we pull more water out of our aquifers, they're depleted. They have slow recharge rates. If we pull out of our surface waters, we negatively impact the biota. In Georgia, we're constantly competing with people downstream, upstream, everywhere, constantly competing with who gets to use this water and who gets to use it for what they need. But whenever you talk about using these waters, it takes a lot of money to build these systems, to be able to maintain these systems, the cost to pump that water from point A to point B. So you want to be really efficient on how you use that water. But whenever you start working under deficit irrigation conditions, you have to worry about how you're going to affect your crop, and a full understanding physiologically of how this is going to affect the source strength for that fiber gain is not fully understood. So how does cotton respond to drought? We wanted to look at physiological parameters and yield throughout the growing season in the humid southeast in Georgia in response to our irrigation treatments. And we hypothesize that these differences in yield stability will be associated with these changes in these physiological parameters. For our study, we chose Stripling Irrigation Research Park. Again, that's in southern Georgia. We have a lot of rainfall in southern Georgia. 2013 was a pretty awesome year for rainfall, but we have nice deep sands there at Stripling Research Park. And with 2 or 3 days, you can generate a drought response. It's a really nice place to do irrigation research work, especially in the southeast. We chose 3 cultivars with the hope of maybe finding some sort of genetic variability for people to look on in the future. 2 irrigation treatments, completely dry land. Dry land in Georgia is a fun thing, but and then also 100% checkbook, which is described in your right here. So for each crop specific growth stage, there's a certain amount of water you're supposed to apply per week. We try to balance that with our rainfall. So get rainfall, bring it back up with the checkbook if you don't meet your target. And our plots were laid out in a randomized complete block with a little N of 4 for 2012, and we cut it back to 3 for 2013 just for space concerns. The data were analyzed by a two-way mixed model ANOVA. So we took all the data from 2012 and 2013 and used a super block to account for that year-to-year variability as well. So every measurement we took, we measured pre-dawn and midday. So we were out at 4 o'clock in the morning until 6 o'clock in the morning before light ever touched the leaf surface. And we were measuring a suite of chlorophyll fluorescence parameters and other parameters. And then we came back midday at the same day, provided clouds didn't come in. So between 12 and 2, provided light intensity was above 1200 PAR, we went ahead and conducted our measurements. So we measured with a Schlander pressure bomb featured here in the top corner. We measured pre-dawn water potential. Then we measured midday water potential. So that's the uppermost fully expanded leaf. We also measured pre-dawn leaf temperature, midday leaf temperature, and midday air temperature. With a OS5P fluorometer featured down here, of OptiSciences. We measured maximum quantum yield before light ever touched the leak surface. That's the FEFM. 5PS2 is our actual quantum yield midday. So, and then electron transport rate, that's, you know, and then our gas exchange was done with a Licor 6400. We measured net photosynthesis, gross photosynthesis, midday dark respiration, stomatoconductance, and transpiration. So first and foremost, no cultivar difference. Both years never happened. This was either because the stress was not great enough, or there was no difference between the cultivars. More than likely, the stress was not great enough in southern Georgia. So we pulled all the data. Each data point I'm going to show you is all three cultivars and how they respond to our situation. Okay, 2012 was a little bit hotter and drier. We did receive more rainfall. The black bar, it's kind of difficult to see, shows the checkbook target that I showed you in the table earlier. The rainfall represents our dry land treatment. Then green is in our irrigation, yellow is our checkbook total. So that's how much water the checkbook treatment actually received. Okay. The asterisks denote when blooming started. There's a weak shift in 2013, so they matured a little bit later. Our bloom started a little bit later, rather. So the difference between our first two measurements is roughly about a month. Okay. So pre-dawn water potential is assumed to be in equilibrium with the soil water potential, provided there's no transpiration overnight. So if you go out and you take the pre-dawn measurement, you have a measurement of water status of that plant. You have a measurement of whether or not it's actually under drought conditions. So it's a nice measurement. In our study, it was a strong indicator of any differences for any other parameters measured. So our midday data, the differences were bigger. It's hard to show, can you? So our pre-dawn data, this is significantly different. There are error bars on that. It's early season, okay? Our midday data, the differences are always bigger, but they're subject to this variability. You can, like a cloud can go over and those numbers can shift rapidly. They're not as reliable. So we're gonna focus on these three dates here. That's where we found statistical differences in pre-dawn water potential across the entire study. So on these days, net photosynthesis decreases. The top graph, panel A and panel B, it's net photosynthesis, 2012-2013 for A and B respectively. So anytime you have a difference in pre-dawn water potential, you have a decrease in photosynthesis, net photosynthesis. Same trend holds for gross photosynthesis. Dark respiration, so the carbon being burned that you just made, the trend's not very clear, but since we had these decreases in net photosynthesis, if you treat this as a proportion of dark respiration of that gross photosynthesis, you see an increase, with the exception of that one point on point A, which is very easily explained. So the differences in pre-water potential weren't strong enough that later in the season, which there's evidence showing that later season crops don't respond as well, or don't respond negatively as much. So transpiration not decreased. The metal conductance, so transpiration is top, A and B, irrigated and dry land. Stomatoconductance, no difference on that same point, but if the stress is severe enough, you do tend to pull differences out. 2013, again, that first point, younger crop, even though the differences were small, you still do see differences in stomatoconductance. Water use efficiency, no real trend popped out with pre-dawn water potential, but we always see a decrease as the season progresses, and that's interesting in itself. Air temperatures were similar through both studies, but leaf temperatures did tend to increase in the 2000 or in both years. For all chlorophyll fluorescence parameters, yes, we got differences. They're not biologically significant differences. Maximum quantum yield, the top panel, anything over 0.8 is golden. You're good. Your cotton's healthy. 5PS2, no real statistically significant differences. The same with electron transport rate. So upstream of the carbon reactions, nothing's really being affected by the range of water stress values we found. Yield was hurt in 2012. It was a much hotter, drier year. 2013 was cool and wet. No real differences between the two treatments, no yield loss at all. So 2013, 35% loss, 2012, 35% loss, 2013, no loss, water savings. So back to our original question, we don't fully understand the physiological mechanisms, how they come together to decrease our source strength for our fiber growth. So on a leaf area basis, this is not as a whole plant basis. We have decreased photosynthesis. More of that photosynthesis is being burned just to keep the plant going. Somatoconductance is reduced, so less source for the carbon reactions. Canopy temperature increases. No real differences upstream of the carbon reactions, but you do have a decrease in lint yield as the sum of all these. So our future research, we're going to be looking at the increases in canopy temperature we saw over the past 2 years to maybe monitor how our crop is doing whenever we're actually scheduling on this pre-dawn water potential. So we're going out 3 days a week measuring pre-dawn water potential, scheduling our irrigation, and seeing how the canopy temperature responds. And we also, this is actually, both of these studies are in the works as we speak right now, but we're also going to look at the morphological and growth, classical growth responses. So heights, nodes above, white flower, everything. We're going to use a scanning electron microscope and actually look at stomatal density, stomatal area, stomatal aperture, everything we can find. And with this, I'd like to thank the University of Georgia, Georgia Cotton Commission, Cotton Incorporated, my committee, Dr. John Snyder, Guy Collins, Philip Roberts, Mark Van Ursel, and Derek Oosterhaus, my field help, Jared Whitaker, Calvin Perry, Lola Sexton, Dudley Cook, Tyler Beasley, Calvin Meeks, and Jenna Pitts, and additionally, Seth Bird. And with that, I'll take any questions.
We have time for the questions. I have one. How did you and when did you measure respiration and how did you estimate gross photosynthesis?
The name of the author escapes me, but basically you measure respiration pre-dawn. So we're out there with a gas analyzer pre-dawn as well. And there's a Q10 equation, so for every 10 degrees you have a certain amount of increase for respiration. So we have respiration pre-dawn and leaf temperature pre-dawn, and then we have leaf temperature midday, so it's an estimation.
So you said that all these were pre-dawn, mm-hmm. and it's pretty dark pre-dawn. What kind of lights were you using at the time?
I use a red headlamp, and I put it on a Licor quantum sensor, and I don't even read one par. That thing's, it's fun working in a cotton field with a headlamp. Oh, gnats aren't attracted to red as well, by the way.
So, what light level did you use for while measuring the photosynthesis?
We used ambient lighting, so if anything was under 1200 par, we did not take a measurement. Typically, measurements were between 18 and 2200. Sometimes you had a little bit of sparse cloud cover, but we did reach steady state photosynthesis.
So the system you used didn't have any light?
Yes, we didn't have the light in 2012. We thought it was inappropriate to add it in 2013.
Okay. Any other questions? No, thank you.
Thank you.